Groove Therapy.
98.7 KISS FM, 3.5 hours of commercial-free music is all yours. We have the Latin Rascals on the turntables.
Tell us about the sounds that Shep Pettibone was playing that kind of influenced you to do what you started doing.
I looked up to Shep Pettibone. A matter of fact, he played for KISS FM doing the master mixes, and I always wished that I could be like neck to neck with him or have that same opportunity like him. And I looked at Shep as a god, and I studied his editing, and I thought at that time that it was done with cassette decks, and I started to like imitate his edits.
I know that a lot of the early stuff you did, like I've read that you were into like using pause button editing, and you didn't really know about tape splicing and things like that. How did you first find out about splicing tape and those fundamentals of tape editing?
I was doing really good job using the pause button on cassette decks, and I did a special mix, which I had no idea. I used to love Streetwise records and Tommy Boy records at the time, and I played like 20 minutes of non-stop Streetwise and Tommy Boy records, which Arthur Baker produced, and I never bothered looking at the labels. I just liked the songs, and after the tape was played on the radio, Arthur Baker called up and asked for the Latin Rascals to do an edit for him, which was Breaker's Revenge. And that was my first time face-to-face with a reel-to-reel machine. And this was a half-inch, and I had to learn on the spot. So me and Tony, we acted as though we knew what we were doing, and we learned over the weekend.
Yeah.
And it was like hands-on. It was like we had no prior experience. The only thing I knew to do was to pause and play, you know, record a record and just use a cassette deck. We had no idea how it was done, but we figured it out. So it shows that the talent was in our heads, and all we had to do was actually apply it whichever way it worked. We had no technique. There was no set way of editing. All we knew is that we needed to turn these records out and make them interesting.
That's fascinating, because I mean being Atlantic Records, being a major label, you know, being on the soundtrack for a major, like a studio movie, to have your first edit job on a track with the Profilers, you know, Breaker's Revenge, was that a bit sort of daunting, or?
I ran home to start gathering ideas. I was really excited, and it was like a dream come true. It was almost like an unbelievable experience to work with Arthur Baker, one shot, Atlantic Records, Breaker's Revenge, and it was just an honor, and we stayed the whole weekend. I don't remember going home. We got in Friday, left Sunday night. Arthur came in, listened, and we just did some adjustments, and that was it. That was our beginning to a long future as the Latin Rascals with Arthur Baker.
And how old were you guys at the time?
We were 18 or 19.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
How did you hook up with your old partner, Tony Moran?
Tony worked at a record store called Downtown Records, and I was a customer there. And Tony used to hand me records so I could be up to date with all the new stuff. And it happened so that I used to bring my master mixes, my cassettes, and play them. I used to go nice and early, so I had a shot and having them played in the store. And one of those days, Carlos de Jesus, which was the air personality, the DJ for WKTU, he happened to be there at the same time. And my tape was being played, and he looked at me. He said, "Is this you?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "You want to hear it on the radio?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You have a reel-to-reel?" I said, "No." He said, "Can you get one?" And I just looked at him, and he said, "Put it on reel-to-reel and drop it off at the station." Tony heard that. And Tony called me over and he said, "Listen, I got a reel-to-reel." He said, "If you want, you could come over to my house and transfer your cassette to my reel-to-reel." So I went to his house, we transferred it to reel-to-reel, and then as a favor, he did a mix in return. You know, he did me the solid. It was without him, I wouldn't be able to put it on a reel-to-reel. And then he did a mix on his own, so I submitted my my tape. It was played that morning. I wasn't around to hear it. And they played it again in the afternoon, and I won DJ of the Year. Then, so Tony submitted his tape, and at that time it was Dynamic Duo, Kids from Brazil. So we thought that if we made a little partnership as well, a team, that we could get double the exposure, you know. So, you know, we went in as Albert Cabrera and Tony Moran at first. And then Carlos de Jesus, or Paco, we were in front of Paco and he was ready to play our tape. And he goes, "So what are we going to call you guys?" And I was like, "Well, we had no idea. We just went in as our individual names." And then he goes, "Okay, well, how about the Young Latin Lovers?" And we were like, "Okay, you know, we're not in the position to come up with a name." And that's Paco. So he said, "All right, we got the Young Latin Lovers live on WKTU." And we were like, "Okay, Young Latin Lovers." So I think the next week we submitted a new tape, and we didn't put Young Latin Lovers. We just put our individual names again. And he goes, he said, "Albert Cabrera and Tony Moran, the Young Rascals." And we were like, "Young Rascals, okay, sounds cool." So we left it at that, and then we submitted another tape a week later, and then he said, "Albert Cabrera and Tony Moran, the Latin Rascals." And we went, "Whoa!" That was it. And we kept Latin Rascals, and we started writing that down whenever we submitted a tape to KTU. And that was it. We started just doing mixes and working with Arthur every day, and whatever he worked on, you know.
Mm-hmm. And this was, what year was this?
This was 1982.
82. So this is before Breakers Revenge.
82 is when we started on WKTU. Yeah. And then I think a few years later we started to work with Arthur, and that record came out later on or something like that. So.
And were you guys releasing bootleg vinyls of the tapes you guys were doing? Like,
No, we did one, Genius at Work.
Yeah.
That one I want to talk about, because that one was on J&T Records, and it was actually credited to Sir and Duff.
Yeah, Sir and Duff are just makeup names.
Can you tell us a little bit about J&T Records?
It was Julio and Tuta. Yeah. The Kids from Brazil.
Yeah.
Those two, J&T.
So were the Kids from Brazil actually the people behind J&T?
Yeah.
Can you tell us any more about the Kids from Brazil? Because they're a name that they're very elusive in themselves, really. You only see them mentioned very sparingly in a lot of stuff that I read.
Well, they became longtime friends. I still hang out with Julio now. Actually, we did a project last year, an act out of Mexico, Emmanuel. We did a remix last year. Tuta moved to Brazil, and I remember him being A&R for Electra or Warner Brothers or something like that in Brazil. He owned Prime Cuts at the time of the editing days. I don't think the bootlegs thing lasted long, but it may seem so, because if you're asking me who's J&T, it obviously is because they've done somewhat of an impact.
Can I talk about the Big Apple Productions record for another moment? Mm-hmm. I suppose at the time, did you realize how much impact that was going to have on, let's say, you know, music nowadays, really? You know, so many groups and producers nowadays are being influenced by that whole era. Did you have any idea back in those days?
No, I don't even have all those old tapes that are classic now that I hear that are being sold on the internet and collected. There's a whole bunch of Latin Rascal tapes. And the same thing with the Big Apple. I mean, we did that for fun because it was happening. It's almost like maybe the music that I'm involved with now, 10 years from now, will be something that people will look back to and say, remember those days. But I was just in it. When you're in it, you don't really see where it's going to take you, you know? And I never knew that we would be considered innovators, or actually the Latin Rascals were to actually change the face of music as far as editing was concerned. I had no idea.
Do you guys feel like you've changed the face of music?
Absolutely. We definitely have been an inspiration to a lot of the producers, and even the newer producers don't know that they were influenced by us. But if I influenced Todd Terry, he tells me that, and Armand Van Helden, then anyone that looks up to them, obviously I'm the granddad of who they looked up to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And in other news, early reports in and in other news.
One for the treble, one for the treble, one for the treble, ten for the bass.
Come on, baby, let's rock this, let's rock this, let's rock this, rock this, rock this, rock this.
guys like us, we're really into cut and paste music, and a lot of the music that we're into to this day stems back from like that early sort of East Coast America, you know, New York, Miami, cut and paste mega mixes, and a lot of the guys like Danny Krivitz, Chet Pettibone, Levan, Walter Gibbons, a lot of these guys from the early sort of studio pioneering that you guys did has sort of brought us to this day, and hence everything that we're into, including like a lot of modern forms of like hip hop and sort of breakbeat and breaks and electro and so forth, all stems back to what you guys have done. You know, I try to explain younger guys now about machine gun edits, and they just assume that it's pushing a button and that gets that triggering sound. And when you try to explain to them that it's actually tape splicing, it's sort of way beyond their heads, they can't grasp it. And hence the reason why we're the interest in J&T Records and that whole period of edit music.
For the people listening to this on the radio, can you kind of explain to them some of the techniques such as machine gun editing, and how were they created, how were they made, how'd you do them?
You actually have to physically cut tape, and what you do is that you copy the same part over and over and over again. I would say mathematically or musically, you would have to paste them with tape and create that brrrr, which we use computers to do that now, but we had to manually do that, so it takes a while, because you have to record from one machine onto another machine, and then you have to also mark the spot, because how will you know, and then take that piece and cut it out and then paste them together. So it becomes a little art piece. So if you look at it, you see a whole bunch of little white pieces of tape, and you can actually see where it's being edited.
Can we talk about some of the records? And I might get you to have a bit of a chat about some of these records we're going to pull out.
The first one I want to start with is the Cutting Remixes Volume 1, and it's got a picture of yourself and all the guys that you were working with, and a lot of guys that I admire.
This is Tony Moran.
Mm-hmm.
This is Kelly Monahan. She's the one that we used to submit our tapes to for the KTU. She used to actually give them to Paco.
Mm-hmm.
Paco and Carlos and Sue's depended on her for the master mixes on KTU.
Tell us about the Like Eddie Did, Axel F, performed by Eddie's Rascals.
This record was given, wow. This, you know, the guy who produced this, I don't think he'll mind now. Def Rerick, that's Ted Currier, backwards, spelled backwards. Oh, I don't know if you remember Ted Currier. He produced Sweet Sensation.
Okay.
He's a producer of a lot of the freestyle music back in the days. Yep. There's another real good record, Como Tu Te Llama. You remember that record?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Como Tu Te
Llama. I collect freestyle records.
That record, yeah. Ted Currier produced, and he spelled his name backwards because this was mainly another one of those boot jammies.
Funny records.
So it was okay to give us credits because we weren't going to get in trouble, but yeah, there it is, Ted Currier.
Thank you.
just in terms of dub mixing, because like those 212s, like the dub edit mix you've got on them, they're like insane. And just for me, it's like, for me, that's the beginning of house music. You might beg to differ, but that's like to hear. I can hear a lot of early house and just the edits and so forth. Could you tell us something about like the actual art of dubbing, editing, and who kind of influenced you in dubs, and whether like, you know, guys like Lee Perry and King Tubby had kind of influence, like being the sort of original dub masters, and equipment you guys were using perhaps?
I prefer dub versions just because I hated vocals. So whenever I picked up music, I always went to the B-side first. And it was just like that. I mean, there was really no reason why I chose dubs. It's just, I just preferred instrumentals, because I became a fan of music in 1976. With Star Wars music and Alec R. Costandino's, all the disco records. Mm-hmm. A lot of those records were instrumentals back then. Well, dub versions came from my memory as a tool for DJing. And before it became a dub, it was more like the vocal and then an instrumental of it. And then we would go back and forth, put a little bit of the vocal in and take it out and do little tricks like that. I think the first dubs that I started to fall in love with was the Shannon, Let the Music Play and Give Me Tonight.
Mark Liggett, Chris
Those were the dubs that I remember really appreciating. And there's no art of it. I mean, the art is just, the thing about the dub is you just go, you just record on the fly. In other words, you got like your 24-track board ready to go, and you start muting some of the things to make it empty so that you could hear a little bit more of the meat and juice of the record, bass line, drums, and percussion. And then you start putting effects on vocals to start to dubby it up so that the vocals are not really being played straight out. There are all kinds of delays ready as soon as you pop them in. And you don't pretty much plan a dub. A dub is basically let it play and just have fun, and then take all the best pieces and edit them together.
One of my all-time favorite records has to be B-Boys Breakdance by the High Fidelity Free, and the dub mix and the edit mix was of course done by none other than the Latin Rascals. Could you tell me something about that?
This is the first record we ever worked on.
Okay.
We got $200 for this edit. We did this out of our houses using quarter-inch tape at the time. This was our first opportunity. This was our very first record, so this is a special record.
Yeah.
This is first on the list.
Also, it was produced by Hashim Al-Naifish fame, and of course he's one of my favourite producers as well. Is there any of your favourite edits or dub mixes that were done back in the day that kind of stick in your head now?
The first record that pops in my head is Out of Touch.
Yep.
A lot of the records on Cutting Records is where we really went nuts with editing.
Yeah.
All the Sapphire stuff, the dub versions, pretty much we went to town with the editing.
And you guys played percussion on Sapphire, Don't Break My Heart. It was produced by Omar Santana. Could you tell me a bit about sort of the drum machine you guys used?
I remember playing on pads
that
day. It was set up by the engineer, and I just came in and asked for a timbale sound and some other kind of percussive sounds that's in the record. And I just played along. At that time, I wasn't into engineering like now. Mm-hmm. I basically just was, you know, editing and playing percussion.
Albert, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure having a talk to you today. And
truly an honor.
It really is. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Very much. Thank you. Thank you. Let's go.